Hey, listeners, it's Jen. I'm so excited to bring you this week's episode with Amanda B., the host of the 6 Degrees of Cats podcast and a member of the New York City rock and roll band Leathered. Amanda and I's conversation is going to be broken up into two parts. So this week, please enjoy part one of my conversation with Amanda B. Hey, Amanda.
Hey, Jen.
What are you listening to this week? Welcome to season four of What Are You Listening To? The weekly podcast created to foster community through music by sharing the stories behind the songs that soundtrack our lives. Some of the songs are old, some new, all good. I'm Jen Tully, and this week I'm joined by Amanda B. Amanda is the writer, host, and producer of the podcast 6 Degrees of Cats, the world's number one cat-themed culture, history, and sometimes science podcast. She leverages her background in research, mental health advocacy, professional development, and trauma-informed violence prevention to thoughtfully connect topics as disparate as sainthood, Vikings, and Valentine's Day to the world's most populous domesticated pet, the cat. Amanda is also a musician who leads the New York City-based rock and roll band Leathered. Spoiler alert, we're going to get into that in a minute. As always, Amanda and I are going to get to know each other through four songs. Two are her picks and two are mine. This week, we'll chat about cats, the Podcast Academy, songs that are meaningful to Amanda, and some of her own music chosen by me. Which songs do you think we're going to discuss? Tune into our conversation to find out. And in case our song picks are new to you, we'll publish a playlist with the episode so you don't miss a beat. With that, let's get started. Amanda, what are you listening to this week?
Thank you so much, Jen. Well, in addition to my favorite podcasts, including yours, obviously.
Thank you.
Yeah, I love this podcast. When I'm listening to your opening pitch, I'm like, oh, it's the perfect podcast for me.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. And I must add a caveat. 6 Degrees of Cats is indeed the world's number one cat-themed culture, history, and science podcast, but it's also the only cat-themed culture.
Don't say that. Come on now.
A little team joke here.
You take that. I love the show, and we'll get into this later, but dirty little secret about me, I don't even think we've shared this before. I, like your dad, am cat agnostic. So for me to love the show, I think is even a testament further.
Oh, I love that.
Because it's so interesting. I'm going to fangirl in a minute about your show, but just things that I'm a history nerd. I love all of those kinds of anything that's history related I'm in. And so, the production value of your show is so high. I love the sound editing. Tons of research must go into it. Your guests are always top of their field. So we'll get into it. But I too, even as a non-cat, and I won't say I'm not a cat lover, but I do love, I think it was your Father's Day episode where you described your dad as cat agnostic. And I was like, that's me.
Thank you so much. And how apropos, what a perfect runway, because the recent two episodes really do connect to my first choice of the songs that I'm listening to it that really just are spiritually so connected to who I am as a person, not just as a musician. The two episode arc was about the history and underpinning of, I think, pop music, we can call it generally, but specifically rock and roll and kind of band-based music, organic kind of stringed instrument forward, genres, primarily rock and roll, which if you listen to one of the episodes, we talk quite a bit about the contributions of Black and African American creatives and the voices and the spirit of the music that propels us to, make music. So my first song is Reasons by the late, great Minnie Riperton. I mean, when you hear Amy Winehouse, who names her as an influence, she says, yes, Riperton, and I'm like, is that a British pronunciation of her name, or
I've always heard Ripperton myself, so I think you're right. I think it's Ripperton. Let's go with Ripperton for today.
We're calling it
listeners,
Ripperton.
If we're wrong, let us know about it.
I appreciate that. What I love about Minnie Ripperton is her whole catalog. She was this wonderful soul singer. She used to be with the Rotary Connection. Her voice can be definitely heard and recognized in a lot of really classic 70s funk hits. And she was definitely a go-to because she's famous for that high whistle note that Mariah Carey is, you know, taking that mantle. And I first got into her actually kind of as a joke because there was an Arby's commercial that featured her most famous
Arguably song.
Yeah, Loving You. Yeah. And I was always like, I don't know how I feel about this song. It's a little saccharine, but also that note is like fascinating. And it became my karaoke song because I was like, oh, I can hit that note kind of as a
what?
Joke. Yeah, well, after a little practice that my neighbors, I'm sure, appreciated when I was in college. Yeah. I can't actually hit that note.
That is insane. That might be the biggest like mind blower of the whole. Well, and just in like learning about her, and of course, like, yes, Loving You is a song people know. And I think your pick, I think Reasons is a far better song. And you can't deny the genius of somebody that has a 5-octave range, right? I mean, that's insane. I think like normal, like average skilled singers have like 3-ish octaves is normal.
So
to have 5, I mean, I just can't even imagine being able to use your voice in that kind of a capacity. But tell me about Reasons then. Tell me why this one, after the Arby's commercial, what led you to dig deeper, especially in this album, which is so good. It's off the Perfect Angel album from 1974, which is just classic in every way, from the album cover art to the songs within.
Oh my gosh. And it was produced, I mean, or at least supported heavily by one of my other faves who didn't make this list. Sorry, Stevie Wonder.
Yes.
You know, so I always was aware of her. But then when Amy Winehouse became famous, I think she really renewed this biggest credit to Amy Winehouse for spotlighting and shouting out all of her classic influences, Billie Holiday, Ella Fitzgerald, and of course, Minnie Ripperton. I lived in Japan in my 20s and I dated this guy. One of the better things to come out of that relationship was he and I connected through a love of music. As I think I mentioned, he's British. And I think her music is sampled quite a bit. So he was really aware of her. And she already was, I think, just had a different cultural cachet or position for people in our age group. So he had given me, I think, a CD of her stuff. And I listened and I was just, when I heard, there's 2 songs by hers. It was between this and Les Fleurs. It was just a cinematic, orchestral, just beautiful song. Like when you listen to it, you're just blown away by it. Like, Reasons is very funk. It opens with this sick, sick riff. But there's 2 things that I think really resonated with me. First is just the joy, the profound, like powerful joy, not corny or cheesy or like kind of the wrong side of spiritual music. Like I love gospel. I like some spirituals. That's actually where rock and roll came from. But it's like this. It's kind of like when you think of like Audre Lorde, you know, like that vibe of powerful, profound resiliency, but artfully made. And the lyrics are just so uplifting. I'll just kind of read, like, let me see if I can find this. One of the lyrics that really sticks with me, if I can find this. Well, it's just her opening, "The reasons for my life are in a million places."
Yes.
And it was co-written by her husband. And unfortunately, Minnie Ripperton, oh, such a tragedy. She died of breast cancer. The other fun fact, which I could let you spoil, but this song is co-written by the wonderful comedian Maya Rudolph's parents. And so, you know, I didn't have time to research the timeline of when she might have been informed of her diagnosis or started feeling that well. But the more you kind of dig in and think about just how awesome she was and just where that energy is coming from and how beautiful the song is, it's so, so good. It just, I want more of that. You know, I love a sad song. I like songs about that are basically complaining about who will or won't have sex with you and how that did or didn't work out, basically.
Yes.
You know, I really think when done right, you know, a song of hope that has more of a positive, defiant tone. When it's done well, it is just so good. So yeah, that's my rant and my vibe for this song.
I love it. I love it. And I love to, like, you summarized it beautifully. And I think the like other point that resonated with me is I love it when you're dealing with a song that is making some sort of like social comment, or that is sad or hopeful or whatever the case may be, but it also allows you to sort of take the power into your own hands. And that's kind of what I got from this song too, is she's really claiming everything that she's talking about. And that, like, if nobody's going to tell you how valuable you are as a human to this world and to this life, then you've got to tell yourself, because it's true. And so I really, like, I did the same thing where I started to pull out lyrics that resonated, and then it was all of them. And then it was like the whole entire song. And so I'm like, you know what? I just have to stop and say this whole song needs to be listened to. And you need to read the lyrics while you're listening, because it's like the 70s soul version. For people that were listening last week, it's like the 70s soul version of last week's song. I pulled a telenovela song called Eggs in One Basket that's really beautiful and is a like a meditation on its own. And I was like, what a nice, like, to follow up to this week, because that song is so much like that in terms of like offering an amazing meditation, like I was saying, on how valuable we all are, all of us. And if the world doesn't tell us that, then we have to tell ourselves. And that's really like what I walked away from. And it just made me, like, digging into this album again, made me so sad that we lost her so young. Like you said, she was only 31. And, you know, it was a year after this album was released. So like you said, I'm curious about the timeline. Like, was she ill when she was, she had to have been, I would think, but you don't get any of that. For me, I only get like positivity and hope. And, you know, to reference back to Stevie Wonder, this album makes me feel the way like a song's in the key of life.
Yes.
Does, you know, where it's just full of everything you need to know about that time and place, especially as it represents a certain culture. And so I loved everything about it. I loved this song. I loved digging into Minnie Riperton beyond just some of the big hits that everybody knows. And this song, I thought, had everything. I loved it. So a heartfelt thank you for bringing this one to the show. I loved it.
Oh, well, thank you. And I just love also just reflecting it with you. Not a lot of people appreciate or know her history as much, although hopefully that'll change thanks to your podcast. And I think the lyric that stands out to me that is just so necessary for the here and now is like, you're not alone. That's her chorus.
Oh, yes. So yes. It's so good. And I, again, the whole thing, like as I started to pull out lyrics, I was like, okay, this is going to be a long show if I'm reading all of these to listeners.
Oh, it's so good.
Well, and while we're talking about amazing artists with that we lost too early and that also have a lot to say, tell me about your second pick.
I just realized, I don't know, it's so subconscious, but, you know, Jeff Buckley was a huge Minnie Riperton fan as well. And yeah, you pointed it out. There's a lot of overlap, you know, soul, funk, gifted, prodigious talent, kind of connected to a dynasty or started a dynasty of musical genius. And then also incredible vocal range and obviously, like, you know, passing far too soon for our liking here.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yes. The song I picked was by another late, great, wonderful chanteur, Jeff Buckley. And that song is Jewel Box. And I picked the song because, well, Jeff Buckley is probably one of my gateway artists for me discovering who I am as a musician. He was, you know, he didn't know his biological parentage until I think much later in life. He used to have a different name, Scotty Moorhead. And he was initially kind of influenced by his stepfather, who took him in and, you know, he adopted him. He was his father. And so Jeff's first output, you can hear the influences of like Led Zeppelin and a lot of kind of the guitar heavy stuff with the very theatrical operatic vocals. And I love Grace, his debut album, which was released by Columbia. But, and after he passed away, I think he would have been 30. He drowned in the river. It's definitely very almost legendary. People can look it up. But his mother, Mary Guibert, was, you know, charged with maintaining his legacy. And I think after a fraught discussion, probably internally, they uncovered just he had so many outtakes and demos. Like every musician, you know, thank God for tech, has like a voice memo full of probably notes and hummed doodle, you know, doodads that eventually may or may not become a, you know, a song. So he had all these four track demos probably. And he had gone off after kind of experiencing just what I can't imagine is the experience of becoming instantly very adored and famous and kind of lionized. And wrote a bunch of songs on his own. He had a full length album that he had produced with one of my other fave guitarists, Tom Verlaine from Television. Yep. So he decided, however, to scrap that record. He had a full second album, but he just was like, this isn't, I think it just didn't align with what felt right for him as an artist. And we know that as an artist, you evolve and it takes time. And maybe the stuff you wrote 2 years ago doesn't work. So he had all the other sketches of songs as well. So after he passed away, his estate, under his mother's guidance, decided to release what's called Sketches for My Sweetheart the Drunk. My Sweetheart the Drunk being the name of the full-length album that Tom Verlaine had produced that was ready to go. And he's like, no.
Oh.
So the first half of that record is that full-length. But the second half are the sketches. And that's where Jewel Box comes from. A lot of – so why do I know all about this? Well, Jen, as a teenager, right at the dawn of the internet, I was isolated. I didn't know other people who liked music, but I would hear the seeds of stuff and I had to research. I had to search for it. And I connected to a very vibrant, very strongly opinionated listserv where you email and it blasts all these people who sign up through AOL, specifically for Jeff Buckley. And it was called Jeff Buckley Eternal Life, J-Bell. And so there was lots of discussion on that. And a lot of people were like, oh my God, Jeff would have been so upset to have his private, unburnished tracks released. That might be the case. I hope to God my stuff doesn't necessarily get published like that. But then again, I'm past. It's not me anymore. And Jewel Box is the crowning jewel from those sketches. It is rough, you know. It's actually would have fit in really well though with that like early noughts DIY thing. You know what I'm talking about?
I have that almost exact note written down here.
Yeah.
Like, yes, it is. It feels like, to me, it feels like I was invited into Jeff Buckley's living room and he's sitting there playing this song for me.
Exactly. And it's just so romantic. It's jangly. This really influences, honestly, like the shapes of chords that I'm attracted to. There's this melancholy, shimmery vibe. It has, you know what I mean? Like it's not shoegaze, although like I think what I like about that genre is this melancholy, beautiful, ethereal tenor that is summoned when you have a certain shape of a chord and you let certain notes ring. I don't know who he wrote it about, but it's just like, it's just the sexiest, most like seductive lyrics. Like, I know you're a woman by the way you burn below. I tell you secrets so good, you'll never tell some. Okay, it sounds corny coming from me, but the way his voice, we don't talk about that enough. His voice is just, he had such a unique kind of tenor, alto, and it's just very much like very intimate. And I think, honestly, the lo-fi quality serves the intimacy of that song well. It's still, you can hear he's kind of like working out the bridge a bit, but man, it's such a, I would love to cover it if I could figure out how to transpose it to the notes and work out some of the unresolved like things in it, but it's perfect as it is for me. Such a beautiful song.
Same. And just as like a listener, as an untrained musician, I don't hear anything except this like really beautiful, intimate experience with this artist that I love. And, you know, that Grace album is like canon for me. You know, that's just, it will never go away. The Last Goodbye is one of my all-time favorite songs. Oh my God. I love it. It makes me cry every time. Like when we're talking about lyrics, this is from Last Goodbye, not from Jewelbox, but Kiss Me Out of Desire, and Baby Not Consolation. Yeah. You're just like, has any word, like a phrase greater ever been spoken? But in this song, here's what we're going to ruminate here for a second, because this is dangerously close to topping that for me, which I never say. Anybody that's known me since college is going to be like, wait, Jen found a lyric she likes better than that one. You left some stars in my belly.
Oh, my God, right?
You left some stars in my belly. I'm like, I just can't with that. There are so many, like, it resonates on so many levels. Like, it's so romantic. It's so beautiful. Like I said, from this, like, I have these visions of being in Jeff Buckley's living room and him playing this. But then, you know, I look at my husband or my daughter, and that line really resonates too, right? Yeah. Like, look at the star that came out of my belly, right? Like, it's just like, it can get really literal, and it's also still like so like romantic and beautiful. I was like, I just have to sit on this, you know, and he says it early in the song and then he kind of repeats it at the end. It's how the song kind of plays out, is just with this, you left some stars in my belly. And I'm like, oh, I've never heard that feeling. Like, you know the feeling he's talking about when he says it, yet I've never heard it phrased that way. What did that hit you at all? Like, I don't know why that line, like, out of everything, it just, like, I kept wanting to listen to the song over and over again, almost just to hear him sing that.
Okay, this is why I just so enjoy this platform for processing. I love how you talked about like a star in your belly and relating it to your daughter.
Yeah.
Oh my God, getting little chills there. That's so beautiful. And you know, he had the full package.
He was everything.
An incredible instrumentalist. Like I think he inspired me to become proficient enough to both solo and hold it down rhythmically, because I'm in a trio and I typically tend to be that. And then, you know, his voice, you know, that's what he's most known for. But his lyricism, it's so evocative. The
so
image,
good.
I love the stars in my belly. And I think tying to that is, you know, jewel box of sadness, bring to catch your tears, and tears of joy, tears of sadness.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so beautiful and so haunting.
There's just so much there. And I feel like any song that you pick up of his, you know, whether it's his popular songs, like, you know, I also love Everybody Here Wants You. I think that's a great song.
So good.
New Year's Prayer, that kind of harkens back to what you were saying, sort of that like Zeppelin-y influence. I hear that a lot on that song in particular. But it's just like this one. I love the softer side of Jeff Buckley. So the songs like Jewel Box and Last Goodbye are like really, for me, a sweet spot of Jeff Buckley that I love. And it was so interesting when Elliot Smith kind of first came on the scene. I was working at DreamWorks, and he was a DreamWorks artist on DreamWorks Records. And then, of course, we tragically lost Elliot Smith also. And it was so like, I feel like I can remember sort of grabbing onto his music the way I grabbed onto Jeff Buckley, and then having sort of a tragic scene play out again. And you're just like, why do you have to be so tortured to be so brilliant? But then I think if you are that much of a genius and listening to his music, I don't think that genius is a stretch at all. It must be hard to move through the world whenever you see the beauty and the pain in everything, to the point that you have to articulate it any way you can to get it out of your body. Like, that must be a really strange way to move through the world. And so I think we might get into that a little bit more as we transition into some of your tunes.
Oh my gosh. Well, Jen, I everything you say, it's just, I have so many questions for you. I would love to talk more about Elliot Smith.